You're listening to the Archaic Drum Podcast, in-depth conversations with great visionaries and free thinkers of today. Beat by beat, evolving self and society through ancient wisdom and emerging paradigms, with your host, James Benton.
Thanks for joining us, everyone. Today, we'll be having an insightful and revealing conversation with Guy Crittenden. Guy is a journalist with 25 years' experience writing on environmental and sustainability themes. After co-founding a small magazine company in 1989, he recently shifted his focus to writing and speaking on diverse topics that include shamanism, entheogenic plants, and mankind's relationship with nature and the spiritual world. Guy is a regular contributor at resetme.com, and some of his writings may be found on his personal blog at guycrittenden.blogspot.ca, which include detailed accounts of ayahuasca ceremonies he's participated in within various locations in South America. Guy, welcome. How's it going there today?
I am good, thank you. I'm talking to you from snowy Collingwood, Ontario, Canada. We're having the first blizzard of the year, and it's a good day to be inside talking to you and not out on the highway.
Well, thanks a lot for taking the time to speak with me here today. I really appreciate it. Guy, could we start out? Could you tell me a bit about how you first came or discovered what we're speaking about here today called ayahuasca? And how were you essentially led to this medicine, Guy?
Okay, well, I'll give you I think your audience would be up for the bizarre answer to that question rather than the more...
Well, you may be right there.
One of the insights I've gained from the medicine over time is that time itself, at least this is my working theory, flows in two directions. It flows both forward and backward. Mm-hmm. I have this little pet theory I'm working on that it's not at all about predestination, but things that happen to myself or people generally, often we're led to them. And we can look back when we understand this idea of time and see that we were being drawn towards something, kind of like Alfred North Whitehead's idea that Terence McKenna always used to talk about with the attractor, drawing us toward the transcendent object at the end of time. And my journey into the medicine really began probably about 15 years ago when I've been in the environmental publishing and recycling publishing business as a journalist for 25 years now. And I'd been flown by a client over to the UK to go and look at some waste-to-energy facilities over there. It's an interesting trip. They build these things to look like art galleries. You'd never know they were burning waste in there. Anyway, I was on the plane coming back, and I'd been part of a sort of tour with other clients, advertisers in one of my magazines. So I was on the plane. It was British Airways, and I was sat beside a woman who was a dead ringer for Liv Tyler, the daughter of Steve Tyler, mm-hmm. a beautiful woman who at that time had just broken into the big time with the first Lord of the Ring pictures.
Yeah, I remember seeing that.
So I sat down beside this woman who I fully believed was Liv Tyler. And it was funny because the closer I looked at her, the more she looked like her. It wasn't like one of these things where you see the person from afar and you think, oh, that's Liv Tyler, and you get close and you realize, oh, no, it's not. The closer I looked, the more she looked like her.
Anyway, you didn't hit on her, did you?
Well, It was really conflicted because I wanted to, bouncing a baby on her lap. And we had this space between us because the baby had its own seat in the middle. But of course, the baby was always on her lap. So I was beside her, but at a distance. And I thought, well, you know, she must have a partner and this is all very complicated.
Yeah.
Anyway, we had this really great chat during the flight and we really got into it. And it turned out that she was a kind of new age lady who lived in the BC interior. Her husband or partner was a new age or world music producer. So she was a real hippie chick and a lot of fun. And anyway, the highlight of the conversation was she told me about her trip to Peru, going into the Amazon, drinking this brew with these shamans. And she told me about some of her experiences. Now, at that time, you know, I was just in a different stage of my life with young children and working and trying to pay off mortgages and stuff. And it sort of registered, but it sort of didn't. But the seed was planted. And years later, you know, I guess it stuck in my mind like a burr. And I used to periodically think about that woman and think about what she had done going to Peru. So I guess that's where La Madre had first put this idea, this signpost on the road. So fast forward 15 years later, I'm snowboarding in Whistler. I break my leg. And I have suddenly find myself with a lot of time sitting around in a cast for 4 months. It was my driving leg, so I couldn't drive. And I started really looking at a lot of stuff on YouTube and reading a number of books about this and related topics. So I read the Jeremy Narby book about the singing to the plants, or no, maybe that was the... Steve Byer. I read another book, and I read Steve Byer's book about
perhaps the Cosmic Serpent.
Yeah, the Cosmic
Serpent. Narby.
That was the Narby book.
Incredible.
And I read
book.
The Byer book about mestizo shamanism, and I also had conversations with friends of mine, including a yoga instructor friend whose daughter lives in Peru and exports Amazonian botanicals. And And she and the mother had both gone and drank ayahuasca with the shamans. So, long story short, it was in my mind. And then my stepfather passed away at the age of 86 of complications of heart problems. And his passing really affected me. And so I'm sitting there processing the passing of my stepfather. And I'm sitting there with all this information swirling around in my head about this this experience that a person can have. And I think it was really the death of my stepfather that pushed me over. And I really had it in my head that it's time. It's time for me to get on a plane, go to Peru. And my mission, self-appointed, was I want to find out where we go when we die. That was what was in the foreground of my consciousness. I got really fed up with our technocratic society's rather dismissive descriptions of death and the material culture's view of these things. It's just sort of like, oh, well, it's, you know, there may be a God and we may go somewhere when we die, but just don't think about it too much. Just keep consuming, keep your head down under those fluorescent lights. Keep working.
Yeah.
And my own biological father had passed away about 20 years ago. So both my dads were dead. And I had this big, I don't know, I was like Gilgamesh on his, you know, search for immortality. I really wanted to know the answer to the big questions. So that's what led me to deciding to go. And then one day I just happened to be on, I think it was Facebook or the internet, and I saw a little teaser video for a company called Pulse Tours, operated by Dan Cleland out of Canada here. And they offered quite a nice sort of eco-adventure trip where you could go for 4 days of trekking and looking at animals and staying in a jungle lodge outside of Iquitos, and then you would go for 4 days or 5 days to a retreat center, which in this case was called Nehu Riau, which I don't know Spanish, but I'm guessing means something like New River. Mm-hmm. And
what year was this again?
This wasn't that long ago. This was a year and a half ago or less. Oh. Mm. So I booked my trip rather spontaneously through caution to the wind. I had a feeling I would be well looked after by these people. It's not quite the Wild West that it was back when people like Terence McKenna and his brother Dennis were going down there, and probably had to have a machete to go and hack your way through the jungle.
Yeah.
It's a very developed touristic experience, as you know.
Mm-hmm. So I was down there a couple of years ago myself, and a lot going on down there that's altering some of the facets of the culture.
Well, some people are very disturbed by the way in which Western, spiritual and health-related tourism is altering the culture, minus some of the commercial excesses and the rip-offs that are going on, and the over-exploitation of the vine, which is a whole other story. I personally am not bothered by the fact that we are changing and influencing the shamanism and the tradition, because I think, and in fact, I'll go as far as to say that I know that that plant and that medicine wants to break out of the Amazon. It wants to spread its mycelium, if you will, around the world, much like the internet. And it knows that its own habitat is in extreme trouble. And so it's using people like me and you, podcasts like this, the internet, to cry out, to give a big shout out to this form of spirituality and insight that's been oppressed, since the times that Europeans oppressed the indigenous cultures all over the place.
Have you read this transcript called the Ayahuasca Manifesto?
Yeah, you know what? It sounds familiar. I'm not sure if I have. I think I have. I've read so much in the past year on this. It's getting to be a bit of a blur.
Yeah, it's available for free online. I forget, it was written down by a shaman. I can't place his name right now, but he addresses that. And I've heard it from others where they speak of the spirit of the plant. It has sort of its own agenda in spreading itself further out of the jungle.
Well, the plant specifically told me that on more than one occasion. I asked her about it, and I surrendered to the plant and to the experience. And one of my intentions that I set was, how do you want to make use of me? How can I serve you? And at that time, I had taken a Reiki class, and I thought maybe I'm being called to be a shaman or to become a healer. And the medicine set me straight on that and said, no, you're not really a healer exactly, in the sense you're not going to hold ceremonies and serve people cups of ayahuasca and sing Icaros. Mm-hmm. But your writing is your medicine. That's your medicine bundle. And I'm going to use you to communicate with the world and write about your experiences. And then on another session, she told me you were going to write about other people's experiences, which is why I've started doing interviews and getting them out on websites like Reset Me, that
nice
Alliance thing. So I've been sort of, as I like to put it, deputized by La Madre and sent out to to go and fight the good fight in that way. So it's nice. I'm not confused. I don't wake up in the morning and say, gee, should I be, you know, studying some new, should I be going into some tambo and doing a dieta so I know how to heal someone with a certain plant. I know that's not my bag.
Wonderful. Well, I started the Archaic Drum Project immediately after I returned from Peru. However, I didn't get any clear messages. It was more of a intuition or feeling to be of service in some way and help spread some of the wisdom that's being dished out through this remarkable healing plant.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's, some of what I've learned is intuitive and intuition, but I have a particular style of relationship with La Madre, or Pachamama, as I like to call her, and it's pretty much like being taken to the woodshed. it's all sort of telepathic, and the stuff would sound batshit crazy to anybody who's never done it, but, you know, sort of like, hey, dumbass, I've been trying to tell you for the past three ceremonies, this is what you need to do. Get your ass in gear. Get out and do it. Stop coming back here looking for exotic experiences. You've got work to do. It's very clear.
Get out there, buddy. It's time to get to work.
Well, that's one of the reasons I signed from the magazines that I've been putting out for 25 years. I was beginning to feel that it was time to move on anyway. And my payments to my ex, my spousal support is coming to an end, so my financial picture is looking better, and I can afford to go freelance now. But really, I have a strong sense of what I've got to do, and I'm getting on with it. And it's not only about ayahuasca, the plant. It's about the other entheogens, including psilocybin mushrooms. And it's more, in a way, about shamanism than it is about any particular psychotropic plant. It's I've been doing workshops like the Brad Keeney Institute on African shaking medicine is just one example. And looking at other kinds of shamanic practice, incorporating it into my own habits. So the way I like to put it is, I'm on a shamanic path. That doesn't mean I'm looking to one day have the term shaman on my business card, but I'm walking that path in the same way that a Catholic can practice Catholicism without becoming a priest, or Jewish person can practice their religion without becoming, a leader in the synagogue, a rabbi.
Yeah, I had an authentic African shaman living with me for a short while here a couple of months ago. And I'm starting to direct my attention a bit in that direction. There's some really wonderful teachings that come out of those African traditions.
Well, as Brad Keeney says, you know, they've been the Bushmen and of the Kalahari have been, they're probably the oldest living tradition.
Yeah.
Going back to the last ice age and possibly further. I know that, like a lot of people, I got interested in Buddhism, which still interests me, and I still consider myself Buddhist. And I've read Brad Warner's books, and I really I used to meditate a lot. I want to get back to meditating a little bit more, but there were these shamanic practices that predated the Buddhist traditions. And in fact, strangely enough, it turns out that in places like Nepal, the Buddhists have been oppressing the Tengers, or the followers of Tengerism, which is a form of shamanism, for quite a long time. So in the West, we always think of the Buddhists as these very peaceful, gentle people, which for the most part they are. But it seems that everybody likes to hate the shamans. You know, behind every great religion, there is a shamanic founder. There was some guy out in the bearded man out in the desert seeing a magic ladder or a burning bush or something. But things get codified, and then if you yourself go out and have an experience that where you see a burning bush or you see a magic ladder, and God knows you probably see that on ayahuasca, you'd be prepared to be greeted with at a minimum skeptically.
Yeah, he's just a lunatic that needs some professional help.
I have to be careful how I talk about these things with people, because, you know, talking about having participated in shamanic ceremony of any kind is kind of like coming out and saying you're into BDSM or being caned or something. It's at that level of social.
Sad but true.
And yet I feel as a deputized person that I have to talk about it, because if it wasn't for other people talking about it and sticking their necks out, I might not have discovered it, and then where would I be?
Yeah, I found it interesting after I got back. There was none of my contacts on Facebook even messaged a peep about the whole thing, you know, of wanting to know, well, how'd it go or anything like that. And yeah. And all of a sudden, here, I think it was 2 weeks ago, a friend said, there's a presentation on CNN about what you did a couple of years ago.
I've had that
it looks interesting.
Conversation.
Yeah, it's got to hit CNN before anybody will ever, you know, even consider it slightly.
It's funny you mentioned that, because I've had the same thing. I've had close relatives and close friends sort of politely avoid bringing this up, even though they know it's the most important thing going on in my life right now. But when it came out on CNN, or it's come out in a couple of other mainstream media outlets, suddenly they'll send me a message and they'll say, oh, you know, they're covering this thing that you're into. You know, looks like you're getting some validation. And I think I see where they're coming from. And you know what? It's all good. It's good that it's becoming well-known, because that's what we need before we destroy this planet.
Yes, and I just want to make clear, I don't mean to ridicule or make fun of my Facebook friends here. I just want to clear that up. I was quite skeptical before watching this presentation that CNN gave, but walked away from it quite impressed in how they presented it.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think those of us who've tried this automatically assume that it's going to go the way that LSD went in the 70s, and that there's going to be, you know, a big authoritative government reaction and a shutdown of it. But if you look at how things are developing with cannabis, and I think just the consciousness shift that's going on a lot of fronts around the world, and environmental awareness and so on, you know, I think we may be, I hope, and I think we may be pleasantly surprised that in fact it won't go that way. And I think one of the reasons it might not is that with it, and this is one of the things I like about ayahuasca, is it goes with a shamanic practice. It goes with a ceremonial tradition. And although sometimes people abuse it and they make it themselves and they drink it on their own, ayahuasca usually cures them of that idea pretty quickly. But for the most part, people are doing it in a way that they weren't doing psychedelics in the 60s and 70s. They're doing it as part of a tradition, which is what Alan Watts always used to warn against. He used to say, and he was absolutely correct, that the Nixon administration was going to clamp down on the LSD, and that even though he was a fan of it and had used it, he said, this is going with no discipline. And, you know, in the Eastern traditions, you didn't achieve enlightenment unless it was part of a discipline, so that you could handle what you found out. Mm-hmm. It's not easy, even with ayahuasca, and even when you learn what you learn in ceremony, to discover, getting back to that superstitions idea. Mm-hmm. It's not easy learning some of the things. I call it the shaman's burden, and I plan to write an article about this. I'm not a person who needs somebody to sit with me and hold my hand after I've had a night with ayahuasca, even if it's a difficult one. But the reason I'm taking a break right now from going to ceremonies is I have a lot of thinking to do in processing what I've learned. I mean, I've learned, and you have to trust me that this is not my ego talking, because I've been smacked down by Mother Ayahuasca on many times on this. But, you know, when you get those cosmic enlightenment insights that usually come at the end of 20 years of, you know, fasting and meditation and deep commitment, and you get them in one night, like, be prepared, you know, be careful what you ask for. When you find out things like you don't exist, or I don't exist in the way that I thought I did, that we are in fact living in a holographic world, we are like avatars in, to update the Hindu idea, avatars in God's video game, local manifestations of a universal consciousness that you can sit and interact with for 5 or 6 hours with no mediation, no priest. It's you and that cosmic consciousness. Wow.
Yeah.
Try going to work the next day.
Accept that challenge. Well, you know, some say that one ceremony equals to something like 10 years of meditation.
Or 10 years of psychotherapy.
Yes, as well.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I agree with that. It's funny because I don't know that I've ever been a true addict in my life, but I certainly have had, I'm an adult child of alcoholics and an adult child of one parent who was a workaholic, which has the same impact on the family constellation as drinking.
Yeah.
And so throughout my life, I've had all kinds of compulsive and somewhat addictive tendencies, and I certainly abused alcohol after my marriage fell apart. And so I was interested. I was, as I said, I wasn't even going to Peru to drink ayahuasca to deal with any of that, really. I knew it was in the back of my mind that I might get some healing, but I was really there to, you know, to look into this whole death and life after death question. But interestingly, when I came back after just 3 ceremonies, all of the things that had ever troubled me or gotten under my skin, and in terms of compulsive behavior or addiction, are just gone. They're so gone that I can't even remember what the attraction ever was. And that's powerful. And certainly a powerful healing that I got, and this is the kind of stuff Amber Lyon is always talking about on her website, was one that I hadn't really been aware of, which is that having been the victim of abuse in childhood, not sexual abuse, but quite a bit of violence, physical violence, being hit a lot and smacked around and stuff, I didn't realize the degree to which I had post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, and I think a lot of us do. Maybe most of us. I'm not even going to guess at the percentage. But that is gone. That is just gone. And now I can see why there's all these former servicemen who's fought in Afghanistan or Iraq are going down to Peru, or they're drinking it clandestinely in the United States and Canada and elsewhere, and they're getting healed of that. Because, you know, I don't know if this stuff can cure everything they claim, but boy, it is very effective for depression, anxiety, PTSD, and any kind of addiction and alcoholism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was interviewing not long ago Dr. Richard Grossman, and he's been leading ceremonies for quite some time, and he was specializing at one time. I think he's still doing it, working with veterans who were experiencing PTSD.
Yeah.
And he reported to me that he had had great success with it for these individuals.
Yeah, the word is getting out on that. Mm-hmm. I think I suspect that the legal status of the medicine, as with certain other psychotropic plants, if it changes in places like the United States, not that I am obsessively caring about what happens in the U.S. like some of us do, it will probably be because of the results of all these clinical trials that are going on. Mm-hmm. But that gets to an area that I'd like to talk a bit about in the time that we have remaining.
Yeah, I understand you have rather particular views on this subject of these clinical studies.
I wanted to make sure that we covered an area that interests me a lot and that I have a lot more thinking to do about, but that I do think about. And that is that, you know, because of the interest in the legal status and the curative powers of the ayahuasca, there's a tendency right now in the conversation to focus on, you know, what it can do for people from a kind of Western medicine model. And I do chuckle to myself when I read these reports or listen to these lectures online where some guy who, or man or woman who's a doctor or a psychologist or somebody who's just trained in that those clinical traditions, you know, administers it or studies it, and they put people in MRI machines, and you know they do this with mushrooms and other things as well as ayahuasca, and you know, they're desperate to measure and figure out how this works from the point of view of a very material view of reality, almost like the Newtonian clockwork universe. And you know, I'm sure you have also seen these things where they map the way the brain functions on LSD and things, and oh, this part of the brain over here is talking to this other part of the brain there, and no wonder this person's getting insights because their emotional area is talking to the frontal cortex and their subconscious is being blah, 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 blah. Mm. And that's all good. You know, I'm not against that, but I do sort of come at it from a different point of view, which is more of a spiritual one, which is for me very ironic because ultimately what led me to this, which is sort of what the way Terence McKenna got into it as well, it was science. It was reading books on quantum mechanics. I mean, I'm not qualified to read stuff full of equations and things, but there are some terrific books like Science and the Akashic Field. There's the stuff by Amit Goswami, the quantum activist, where science, the bleeding edge of the bleeding edge, you know, where we're finding out that a molecule or an atom can be in two places at the same time and all that, and quantum entanglement where atoms can be close together or a million miles apart, and be you spin one way and it affects the spin of the other one at the same time. What the scientists are finding, or at least the quantum physicists are finding, is this world is a lot more bizarre than they'd ever thought. And so I think what is developing is a potential going forward that very few people ever imagined, which is that the leading science and the leading spirituality facilitated, I think it will be, by entheogens, are going to come together. And I don't know what the new discipline will be called, and maybe we don't need a name for it. But I'm also a big fan of Rupert Sheldrake and his work on morphogenic fields and this.
Yeah, I had the opportunity to interview him long ago.
So your audience would be familiar with this whole idea that consciousness exists both inside and outside of the brain. And as Sheldrake likes to say, you know, well, show me where memory is stored. And no one's ever been able to find out where it was stored. And everyone assumed that there's some place in the cellular gray matter of the brain where these memories are stored like files in a file cabinet. And they've never found it, and I don't think they ever will, because consciousness exists outside of our brains, and it exists everywhere. And what I have learned from the medicine, and now I'm getting into the point of what I think is going on when we use the medicine, is that what we discover, what we awaken to, is the fact, and I'll just talk about it from a first-person perspective, but this would be true of every person, and in fact, every animal and bird and fish and insect. What I discover is that the filters that are normally on me, so that from an evolutionary perspective, I can function in this realm, this dimension of the five senses, those filters are removed. I wouldn't go so far as to say as they're totally removed, because that probably only happens when we die. But what ayahuasca does is it removes them enough that we can have a very powerful preview or a very powerful connection back to the original state of consciousness that we came from before we were born, and into which we will dissolve or be reabsorbed after we die. And this is where one experiences, I have experienced directly, the very thing that the mystics say and that the Vedic texts talk about, where I am a local, unique manifestation of a consciousness, a divine consciousness that is non-local and universal. And, you know, people can tell you that, and you can read about it, or you can talk to somebody like Brad Warner, or you can read his books, Shut Up and Sit Down, where he goes and analyzes the life of Dogen from the 12th century. Mm-hmm. And they'll say, yes, you are the universe experiencing itself as a human being. But I can get that intellectually, okay? But now I understand why in the meditation schools and in the Eastern monasteries, why the lead monks and priests wouldn't just spill the story to the monk. They would wait, even if it took years, for the adept to get it for themselves. That's why I finally understand all these stories of the lead priest whacking the monk on the back of the head mm-hmm. with a stick.
Right.
Because if you just tell somebody, oh, well, by the way, you're a local manifestation of universal consciousness, or to use Alan Watts' metaphor, you're a wave in the ocean. You are the universe waving. You are the sun shining, and so on. Then it's just an intellectualization. And that can be powerful and life-changing. And when I did meditation and I read those books, it did affect me. But when I drank ayahuasca, my consciousness entered that realm. And it's not like it was astral travel and I had to go somewhere else. This reality is here and it's all around us all the time, but it's vibrating at another higher or different level of vibration. So that's why we don't see it with our five senses normally. Mm-hmm. So the most powerful thing I can communicate to your audience, and it's something I hope to elaborate more in my own writings, is this idea that's what's happening when we use psychotropic or psychedelic plants and medicines, which is why I treat them with so much reverence. It's why I have so little patience for people who use LSD or mushrooms or anything else recreationally and drive around and laugh their heads off and have a good old time, because they're playing with something that's very, very powerful and very, very profound. And that was understood in most indigenous societies around the world, not all of which, but most of which, had some kind of entheogen as part of their sacrament and part of their ceremony and ritual.
Yeah.
And I believe, and this is where I'll get on my soapbox, that the settler culture, the dominator culture that we're all part of, and which as a white middle-aged male I manifest, you know, to the point of perfection, We systematically in that culture not only colonized the world, not only, you know, took over people's lands at the end of a gun or giving people blankets loaded with smallpox and committed genocide or killed off the buffalo herd so they couldn't live their life.
Yeah, yeah.
But we suppressed their shamanic culture and that Tengerism way of viewing the world as having this other spiritual dimension. And what we are in the process collectively discovering as a species, and those of us who grew up in technocratic society are discovering, is the thing that we killed when we also killed the Plains Indians or people for the Aborigines in Australia or any other group you care to think of. We are reconnecting with the understanding that the divine and nature are one and the same, that everything is a manifestation of the universal consciousness or God or what people who drink ayahuasca call Mother Ayahuasca. The name doesn't really matter. We're rediscovering that. We're rediscovering at a time when we need that information because it is the key to understanding the world that we're living in as being a sacred place that must be treated with reverence. And that's where I think I can be effective because I've spent 25 years writing about recycling and using your blue box, or if you're a company, putting a better scrubber on your smokestack so you don't pollute the air. That's all great, but it doesn't. The reason I'm shifting to writing about these other things is that as long as all we're doing is making ourselves feel better about ourselves by putting our plastic pop bottle in the recycling bin, we're not going to make the change that we need to make. We have to get in touch with this real realization of what real spirituality and the divine is in nature. And it's, although you can have...
Absolutely.
And you can have intimations of it sitting in church. I mean, my mother's an Anglican, and she goes to church, and once in a while I go with her, and I get it. I look at the altar. I look up at the vaulted ceiling. I look at, you know, the frescoes and stuff and the stained glass. And, yeah, it gives me a feeling of that there may be something more, and I'm not completely immune to these things. But when I drank ayahuasca, I had a direct experience of this. I got to be Moses for a night. I got to be the guy seeing the burning bush. And right now I get it. I get it that nature's alive. Even the rocks contain consciousness, crazy as that seems. So if more people had that, maybe we wouldn't be only viewing nature as a sink for our pollutants and as a place to be mined for its metals or its oil and gas for one-time use to drive to the mall or to make a bottle made of plastic that we use once and then throw out, to drink water that we can get more cheaply out of the tap. So there, I'll get off my soapbox, but that was my... If you're looking for a message from me today, that's the message brought to you by Monsanto.
Well, we know those guys could certainly use knocking back a few shots. Guy Crittenden, thanks so much for articulating so well these insights for us here today. Is there anything else you'd like to leave us with before we sign off here?
Not a lot. I would just say to people, on a practical level, I would advise people to keep reading and using the internet to bypass the mainstream media and spend time on websites like yours and some of the other consciousness ones out there. Reality Sandwich comes to mind, Reset Me, those things. Keep learning about the stuff that the mainstream media doesn't really get into, because that's where you're going to find your real answers. And the second thing, and this is maybe the final thing I'll say, is I'll just again talk about it from my own point of view. I've discovered when I first, and I one time used LSD and I've used mushrooms, I have discovered that everything we have been told about psychedelic medicines, or what are sometimes called drugs, which is, or hallucinogens, which are words I don't like because they have a editorializing in them. Everything is not only untrue, but almost the exact opposite of what they are. So, you know, don't worry that you're going to do that. One of the most common things, objections I hear from friends is, I don't want to try it because I'm afraid of losing my mind. You know, and they have this, they're remembering this story, which was just a CIA plant in the media anyway, about somebody, you know, drinking or eating LSD and jumping out of a window because they thought they could fly. That's not going to happen. As long as you're in a good setting and you've got someone to mind you and make sure you know, just to help you out, you're not going to lose your mind. You're going to discover your mind, and that little petty tin god called your ego that you thought was you, you're going to realize that was not you, and you're going to wake up to this much bigger thing that you are. And that's an incredibly worthwhile thing. And my advice is, although I don't like to proselytize, I wouldn't want to go through my life not discovering this and experiencing this. And other people should be more open to it. And I say that, and I know it took me a few years of research to build up the courage to try it. So sometimes I forget that. But honestly, you will be okay. You will not lose your mind. You will most likely have the most profound experience of your life. The odds are that it will be a beautiful experience, and even if it's a dark experience, you'll learn things you need to know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So my advice is do it.
Guy, thanks so much. Fascinating conversation. All the best to you there, and we'll be in touch.
All right. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Okay. You too. We're able to continue these conversations through your generous contributions. If you've enjoyed this dialogue or any of the other content on our website, please consider making a donation on our podcast page at www.archaicdrum.com. Thanks so much.